going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter is at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 212, but it means so much more than that. Happy October, Kyle. October 1st. Currently, we got wild card weekend starting right now, even though it's a Tuesday. That's more of an NFL term. I realized as it was coming out of my mouth. But the Tigers are up 3-0, and you know what that means. It's the offseason episode, the postseason episode. Obviously, the MLB playoff bracket is going to be a big thing at the end, but it's so much more than that, Kyle.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we'll be talking about this week. We'll be talking about pretty much every single team, considering all the teams that didn't make the playoffs. We'll have their own little segment, and then every team that did make the playoffs we'll be talking about as we go through our playoff preview. It's currently 12:03 out here on the West Coast, 5 hours before we usually record the episode, and we wanted to do that to make sure that we don't have a full day of playoff baseball behind us when we make our predictions. So we are kind of at a weird scheduling point right now. It's currently 3-0 in the top of the second inning, or bottom of the second inning, like you were talking about earlier in that Tigers Houston game. That is the only game that has started so far. Before we get into the playoff predictions and everything else, we got to do our opener. And Skylar, I'll let you go ahead and get started with possibly a Heisman.
What an unbelievable start to the Boise State running back Ashton Jeanty's junior season. He's been the best kept secret in Idaho over the past couple of years because he lost a lot of carries to the former captain, George Helani, over the years, who's now on the Seahawks. But I recommend looking up this guy's story if you haven't already, just how he came over from Italy, if you're unfamiliar with it. But anyways, we'll get to the numbers here. They destroyed Washington State behind his 259 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns, and 17 broken tackles in a 45-24 win. Just incredible. This guy is absolutely in the Heisman race, and it's so fun to watch him pinball off of every single defender before eventually breaking off a big run.
Yeah, Ashton Jeanty's been special so far this season. It's definitely, it could have just been a 3-week good story to start off the season, and then, has game versus Washington State and could have fizzled out. He did the exact opposite. I know he didn't have 6 touchdowns, but perhaps his best game of the season so far this past weekend. And he really officially put himself in that conversation legitimately this past weekend, which is pretty cool to see. Because I know you've been rooting pretty hard for him, yeah. And not just in the Heisman category, but also to get drafted pretty high as well, too. My opener's got to be something that I experienced and was one of the craziest experiences I've had in my entire life at a sporting event, and that was the last game in Oakland this past Thursday. Me and Skyler, obviously well-documented diehard A's fans, and going to that game on Thursday was an experience that I haven't felt in a long time, and it was very unique to just the entire Oakland A's experience. I've been to the 2012 playoffs, 2013 playoffs. Would have gone in 2020 if they had games there. I was there for the 2019 wild card game. So I've seen my fair share of crazy experiences at the Coliseum. But this was just different. It got louder than I'd felt it before. The vibe within the Coliseum was way different than what I felt it before. There was 47,000 people there experiencing the last time that they'll ever go to the open Coliseum, most likely. And to win that game, it was really cool. But to see the stuff prior to the game was really what got me the most emotional. And I was kind of shocked because I was expecting to cry and stuff during the game and after the game. But at that point, I was just too emotionally drained. What the stuff that happened pregame where Ricky Henderson and Dave Stewart both came out to throw the first pitch to already a packed house. It wasn't like a late filing crowd like it was on Tuesday and Wednesday. Everybody was in their seats before the game even started. And to see those guys and the eruption from the crowd that they got when they were announced was really damn cool to see. And then the national anthem as well too. It ended up being Barry Zito to sing the national anthem, but everybody came up there and they're giving them this long intro. And the Coliseum speakers weren't like, they're not used to having 47,000 people there, so you couldn't exactly hear what was going on during this intro. You just felt like it was this, really long intro, and then they go former Cy Young for the Athletics, and Barry Zito, and the crowd just completely erupts because they had no clue that he was going to be there. sings a damn good national anthem. And then the flyover, which wasn't expected at all. I don't think I've seen a flyover at the Coliseum since, you know, 2012 or 2013. And that, you know, just got me to just yell, probably the loudest I've yelled in a long time ever since there were Raider games there. The game was great. To get a win was really cool. To see what the players did in their embrace post game during the game was really cool, especially sitting in right field where I wasn't in the bleachers, but I was close to it. When Lawrence Butler ran out there in the top of the first inning, he was, you know, giving a tip of the cap, you know, all this stuff to kind of, you know, show his respect to all the fans that was out there, which is really cool. And then Kotze's, you know, post game speech was ridiculous and just made everybody be so grateful for the respect that these players and this team has shown to us. And it's sad it's over, but you never know with John Fisher. You never know if something's going to fall through. You never know exactly how things are going to be in the end. So maybe it isn't the last game we ever see in Oakland, but I just don't know right now. But regardless, really cool. I'm not going to get emotional again too here, but just one of the coolest experiences that I've had at the Coliseum in my hundreds of times being at that location.
Yeah, I didn't make it out there for the last game, obviously, because it wasn't my opener. My head and ears were a little fucked up these past couple weeks, so I thought that wasn't the right environment. But I did get some closure. I was at a Seth Brown walk-off against Seattle a couple weeks ago. We got to talk with Rosarena and left field about it, and Seth Brown a little bit. So that was good, you know. But I, like you said, this is probably not the last time we're talking about this. And I know for you, it's double with the Raiders too. That place is, it was very special for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nothing like that place. We'll say that, but we'll obviously talk about it more again in the future and stuff, but for now we'll close that chapter and we'll move on from that. But getting into this week's episode and all the stuff that we talk about, we're doing the same stuff that we always do: player, pitcher, rookie of the week. There wasn't any crazy performances this week, I would say. I mean, there was like some Shohei Ohtani performances, but that was nothing out of the ordinary from what we've seen from him this year. So who'd you choose?
Yeah, I did choose Ohtani because he led the league in hits once again for a week. His 12 for 22 was good for a 545 batting average, 1.4 OPS. He's ready for the postseason. Who knows about the rest of them, but Shohei's definitely ready to go.
Yeah, Shohei's going to be my pick for player of the week as well, too. 12 for 22 is pretty ridiculous. Only one strikeout in 24 plate appearances, I believe, as well. Just so excited to see him be able to perform on the playoff stage in, I believe, Saturday is the first game that they'll play. And I'm excited to see how that goes because it's, you know, generational talent that we're going to see on the biggest stage in baseball for the first time in his career. Pitcher of the week.
I'm going with Max Fried. I knew I was going to choose him for a while now because he was one out away from a Maddux in the big win against Kansas City last week. They don't make the postseason without his 8 2/3 shutout.
Yeah, there's some good choices here. I decided to go with Kyle Hendricks as my pitcher of the week. A bit of a sentimental value here as well, too. Kyle Hendricks likely made his last start in Wrigley. The last remaining guy, I believe, from that 2016 World Series team, unless maybe Hap was there or Bodie or something like that, but definitely not the role in that 2016 team as Kyle Hendricks had in that time period. He had a phenomenal last start in what has been a really tough season for him. 7 1/3 innings, 2 hits allowed, no runs, only 2 walks and 2 strikeouts, kind of the exact Kyle Hendricks start that you'd expect for him. Just a really cool, really underrated career. I know he hasn't been good these past couple of years, but when he was dialed, he was really tough to hit. And he, you know, wasn't close to Greg Maddux, but he kind of gave off that same energy where he wasn't going to beat you with velo. This is break and his control was ridiculous. So Kyle Hendricks, if this is the last we see of him, hell of a career. And we're definitely one of the greatest Cubs of all time. Rookie of the league.
I'm going to go with Wyatt Langford of Texas. No postseason on the line for those guys, but he did have a great, solid all-around week. 3 homers, 3 stolen bases, and a 300 average for the former top pick. That's pretty much the best you can do in a September call-up situation for a guy who has been there the whole year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Wyatt Langford for my rookie of the week as well, too. This is kind of the Wyatt Langford that we expected to see going into the season. We didn't expect him to have kind of the lulls that he had in the first couple of months of big leagues. I know he ended up getting hurt came back and ended up being pretty good. He had that cycle up in Baltimore and Sunday Night Baseball. But then after that, kind of, you know, went into some struggles as well too. But this past week, I thought we really saw the potential of Wyatt Langford be on full display with the speed and power combo that's pretty unique in the MLB right now. 6 for 20, but did have 3 homers, 3 stolen bases, and an OPS over 1.1. Hopefully, as just a pure baseball fan, we get to see more of this type of Wyatt Langford next year and years on, because that's him and Evan Carter are going to have to produce in order for the Rangers to not go 78 and 84, which we'll talk more about as we get into the team grades here in a minute. But onto the NFL side, this is pretty much the only NFL talk that we'll have the entire week, except for maybe our bets at the end of the show. But our player, defensive player, and rookie of the week here together. Who do you choose for player of the week?
Baker and Derrick Henry were real close, real awesome weeks for them. They were dominant, but I think you got to go with Jared Goff for what he did last night. 18 for 18, a perfect game. This offense is insane. That's why I picked him to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was really close to choosing Goff. I really, really wanted to. If he got to that 20 attempts, I definitely think it would have been no doubt to put him in there. But what Derrick Henry did on Sunday night was pretty spectacular. And not just his, you know, statistical performance, but just the way he was running and the speed that he got on, especially the 87-yard touchdown run that he had early in that game, was just like prime Derrick Henry all over again. Yeah. It was really cool to see because he's one of the most fun running backs I've ever gotten to watch in our lifetimes. 24 carries, 199 rushing yards. He got 209 total yards with 10 receiving yards and 2 total touchdowns, 1 through the air and 1 through the ground. Showed how dominant that Baltimore rushing game can be and will be for the rest of the season, I assume, now that they kind of got Derrick Henry going again. Defensive player of the week.
I'm going to stick with the guy who won the actual award. That's the Atlanta linebacker, Troy Anderson. He's one of those guys who showed up at the Senior Bowl a couple years ago out of Montana State and just destroyed everybody. He's probably the fastest linebacker in the league, 17 tackles and the game-winning pick six off of Derek Carr.
I went with a different guy, also a linebacker. I went with Fred Warner as my defensive player of the week.
He can win it every week, probably.
As well as 7 tackles. This guy is like a Madden user, man. He does stuff every single week that you just don't think is possible for a player at his position. The speed, size, power combo that he has as a linebacker is pretty unique. Definitely going to be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. I think I've always been saying this, and maybe as a Raider fan, this isn't the greatest thing to say, but I think this is the best defensive player in all of football. And just for the impact on winning that he has every single week for that team is pretty underrated. And I'm surprised there's not more people that have maybe the same opinion that I do on Fred Warner.
He takes the ball away every game.
Yeah. He impacts every single game in a crazy way. On to the rookie of the week.
I think you got to go with Jaden Daniels again, right? He did throw his first interception, but that didn't stop him from dismantling Arizona. 26 for 30 passing. He's the most accurate youngster since Breeze and Brady. That's epic. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to go with Jaden Daniels. I decided to go in a different category here. I went with Malik Nabers for his 12-catch, 115-yard performance on Thursday Night Football. Even though it was a loss, I think we got another great performance from Nabers that shows he is exactly what the Giants expected him to be going into this season, and probably even more. He seems to be already a top 5 to 10 offensive talent in the league. And if he had a different quarterback than Daniel Jones, they'd be a lot more scary.
He could probably win it every week too, but maybe it's because I actually took him in fantasy. I expect this from him because I know he's a great player. I'm a little hard on him. I'm a little hard on Derrick Henry maybe, but we'll see. It's a long season.
Yeah, definitely a crazy performance. Moving on to our team grades, we are going to do every team that got eliminated over this past week, or not eliminated, but isn't going to be playing October baseball. That's the White Sox, Rockies, Marlins, Angels, A's, Nationals, Blue Jays, Pirates, Reds, Rangers, Rays, Giants, Red Sox, Twins, somehow the Twins, Cardinals, Cubs, Mariners, and Arizona Diamondbacks, who got eliminated day after playing their last game, which is kind of crazy to me. Regardless, we'll start off with the worst record of all time, Chicago White Sox, 41 and 121. It's got to be only one grade for this, right?
Yeah, this has got to be the F minus. It's the fifth worst record ever. Most losses since the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. That doesn't even count towards the modern era of stats because it's before 1901. So that's why you don't hear a lot about the Cleveland Spiders these days. But it's really a simple fix for these guys. All you got to do is start rooting for the Cubs. In all seriousness, though, at the top of the wish list, it should be a full lineup of league average hitters. That's where I would start. Shout out Lenny and Sosa. He looks pretty good, but you just need league average players. The pitching's going to figure it out itself out. Excuse me.
And one thing I forgot to add in there as well, too, we're also doing the top of the wish list for each team going into the offseason. That can be a specific player. It can be a specific thing. It can kind of just be anything, but you touched on it well there. Top of the wish list for me for this White Sox team is a good manager. And I know Grady Sizemore was kind of the guy that was thrusted into one of the worst possible roles that you can as an interim manager, but it gave him some decent experience. But the season went wrong in pretty much every way it possibly could have. They didn't trade Robert or Crochet. And with the young talent that they have, I think they really need to establish leadership at the top first, because I don't think we're seeing it from a ton of players. So if they go ahead and get a good manager, I don't know exactly who that could be. Skip Schumacher would obviously be really cool with him. Definitely not going back to the Marlins is what we've heard. Mm-hmm. But I think if they got a top tier manager and just kind of let him, you know, deal with the losses for a couple of years, but you're going to be able to build your team with your players and the guys that you like and shape these guys into, you know, these young kids into players and the men that he wants them to be would be really big. And especially with some of their young talent, especially with Noah Schultz and Higgins Smith and Garrett Crochet as well, too, I think will be really big for that team. But season grades now. So there's that. On to Colorado, who went 61-101.
I'm going to give them a D. I don't think they deserve the F because this is right around where I expected them to be. Tovar broke out completely. He's been awesome. But you have to keep taking shots at young pitching. You can't blame the Cal Quantrills of the world for struggling. That's not the type of pitcher that's going to move the needle. So you've got to get some strikeout guys. That's at the top of the wish list. Go younger. Don't spend the money. Just keep taking shots, right?
Yeah. I give Colorado a D. I gave higher than an F. But the top of the wish list for me is a proven starter. I'll start off with their offensive side first. Brenton Doyle and Ezekiel Tovar, I think, are both studs, but they lacked a lot of the expected help around them besides maybe a Michael Toglia, who was probably less expected than some of the other guys. We saw Nolan Jones have an injury-riddled season. Brian McMahon, who had a good first half, struggled in the second half. Brendan Rodgers, who they expected to be good this year, coming back from pretty much missing all of the 2023 season, was mid. Jordan Beck was underwhelming. Same with Adeel Amador. And Chris Bryant, who they signed to be this guy, is just not the guy who they signed. And he completely sucks. I think we added a proven starter, and there were some of the other guys that they have could help a ton. I just think it's going to be really tough to lure a proven starter to Colorado for obvious reasons. I do like what they've done with their bullpen and going overload on velo, which is pretty much the only thing that stays consistent, whether you're in, you know, Mile High or not. Is that 101 is still going to be 101. We know the break isn't going to be the same, but if you could throw hard, that's probably the best way to get around it. Not saying it's going to work completely, but it is probably the best way to go. And I think they did a good job of that in the bullpen this year. But they got to get some guys that can give them, you know, some, not even a quality starts all the time, but 60% of the time a quality start. And they just don't have anyone like that on their team right now. Next up, Miami, the last of the 100 lost teams. They went 62 and an even 100. What do you got for this?
Now, this is a team that I think deserves an F. Yes, I know they were massive sellers at the deadline, but it's before all that even happened. It was a massive collapse, 17 wins under their projection. I think on the top of their wish list should be that the injury fairy comes and saves the rotation, because no matter who sticks in the lineup out of all the young guys they traded for, that rotation is the only hope for this squad.
Yeah. I gave him a D plus. I shied away from the F, I think, just because of some of the uncontrollables that they had, especially with injuries, was really big. So the top of the wish list I had was a healthy starting staff. Peter Bendix, their GM, president of baseball ops. I'm not sure which, but they both kind of hold the same role there. Had to deal with a ton of injuries to his top pieces and Sandy Alcantara, who we knew was going to be out for the year at the end of last year. We knew that Yuri Perez, who, you know, has Cy Young capabilities, was out for the entire year. And Jesus Luzardo, who they bet on quite a bit to be a pretty damn good starter in their rotation, was only healthy for about a fourth of it this season. And I also put in here that the season could have been an ash if it wasn't for how good of a deadline that they had. They added a ton of minor league pieces. Agustin Ramirez, Deveson De Los Santos, and Robbie Snelling as well, to kind of bet on some guys that are having some crazy minor league seasons that aren't as high as prospects, and also the high prospects that were having a rough year, just to bet on their tools and see how good they could be with maybe a change of scenery, especially with Snelling and his like 8 year that he had this season pretty much with the Padres. Miami, I don't think, is going to be competing for a little bit. They still got a lot of ways to go, but they can definitely have, you know, a better season next year if they have the rotation back. On to the Angels, 63-99.
Yeah, I'm realizing I have a little tougher grading curve for these guys than you so far, because this is even worse for the Angels. F-. And I know Mike Trout missed most of the entire season, but I really think even if he played this year, they wouldn't have even got to 70 wins. Either way, it's a last-place season and another age added to Mike Trout. It's another number every single year. And I think it's pretty simple here. The Angels need Mike Trout to play a full season to have a chance, obviously. And one extra thing on the wish list I threw in was you need Anthony Rendon to hang it up. It's the only way you can get rid of him right now.
No, I also went with an F, not an F minus, but I guess there's that tougher grading scale that you were talking about. The top of the wish list for me for the Angels is a competent front office. It's not just Rendon. It feels like just about every single free agent they've brought in over the last 4 to 5 years, maybe even, you know, 10 to 11 years going back to Albert, has just completely sucked and not been worth the money. Whether that's Brandon Drury, who I think exemplified that perfectly this year. I think he was healthy for most of the year, but had an OPS under 500, which is ridiculously bad. Anthony Rendon. And now with Mike Trout being hurt for like 5 straight seasons, what are we going to start talking about this being a bad contract as well too? And I hate saying it because everybody loves Mike Trout and he's impossible to hate. He's, you know, one of the greatest players that we've seen of our lifetime, but the contract just hasn't been good. And I think they need to, you know, put some more effort into, hey, are these the guys that we really want? And sure, you can chalk it up to some bad luck with injuries, but maybe stay away from some of those guys that have been dealing with a ton of injuries in their career. They do have some young talent, though, which is why it's not an F-. Zach Neto, Logan Ohapi, Nolan Chanuel. The farm has some decent arms, but they need to have pieces added through free agency that contribute, or else these young guys aren't going to lead to anything, especially with how, you know, tough the AL West maybe wasn't this year, but has been in years past. Next up, our team, the Oakland A's.
This is going to be a B season for the green and gold. This year was really important for the future. Which guys can be the future top of the batting order? And we kind of got that answer with Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler, to keep it a short list here, because those guys had legendary seasons I don't think either of us will ever forget. Number one on the wish list, of course, is a new stadium in the East Bay. But before that, you know, we'll have time to talk about that in the future. Let's start finding some new starting pitching, because whoever starts for us over the next 3 years in SAC is going to have their confidence destroyed forever. Forever. And maybe while we're at it, another setup guy to replace the legend of Lucas Ursig.
Yeah. We went into this year, and you told me that we were going to have 69 wins. I would be completely ecstatic with that. I picked the under with our, I believe, like 55.5 win line going into the season. So I did not expect this. So I gave it a B, like you said. I don't want to, feels like I could be slightly biased there, but I also just kind of feels like it was an all around good season. The top of the wish list, though, of course, just like you said, stadium in the East Bay would be really cool. But as to starting pitching, except for with playing in a minor league stadium that isn't good for pitching, it's going to be really tough to lure free agents, even low tier free agents, into that. So I don't know exactly how they'll attack that. But overall, it's a very successful season for the team, except for the fact of Estuary Reeves being out for most of the year. Maybe Zach Eloff not having as good of a season as we expected after his rookie season that was really damn good for the 60 games he played in 2023. However, the lineup seems to have a really good future with Lawrence Butler, Brent Rooker, J.J. Boudet, Shea Langeliers, Tyler Soderstrom, Jacob Wilson, and Yelop, who I feel like played better in the second half of the season. And the bullpen will remain solid as long as Mason Miller's there. You're going to get, you know, games that you're up in the ninth and he's going to be able to come in and close out. And as long as you have that, you're going to have, you know, an extra 20, 25 wins in there. But with the lack of starting pitching in the minors and the lack of the team's ability to sign free agent starting pitching, it's going to be tough to see this team compete without having, you know, one or two or even a three starter. I love JP Sears, but he's maybe a high tier four. I don't think you can be a playoff team or feel confident in a playoff series if he's the guy that you're rolling out for game one. Mm-hmm. Next up is the Washington Nationals 71 and 91.
I gave him a C-. It was much better than the Miami season, but I still think they were hoping for that Royals type of breakout season. It's another boring one here, but they need a lot of pitching. Josiah Gray is going to be out with Tommy John. Patrick Corbin's probably pitched his last game in the bigs. So that's kind of the one thing I'm focused on, if the young hitters can finally break out, because they should. They're all top prospects.
Yeah, I give Washington a C. I think I had higher expectations for this team than a lot of people did going into the season. I saw the end of their season in 2023 be pretty successful, especially with some of the guys that they brought in through the draft and in trades in prior years as well, too. This season was kind of just a stand mute. I didn't think they improved much. They obviously got some of their talent to the big league level, but maybe that talent wasn't as successful as we expected. So I have the top of the wish list as a top tier free agent. This is a team that doesn't have the highest payroll right now, and we've seen them spin in the past. We saw Strasburg get a big contract. We saw Patrick Corbin get a big contract. And they didn't sign Rendon when he was a free agent, or Bryce Harper when he was a free agent. But there's talks of being Juan Soto possibly being a guy that they could look at this year. And if they were to get him, or obviously he's a tier above everybody else, but maybe an Alex Bregman or Willy Adames, I think that really helped the growth of this team, especially Adames, because the Abram situation is really weird. Not even, you know, gambling wise, but I think baseball wise, I don't think he tracks as a long-term shortstop. I think if they slot him at second base or to get Adames on a 6-year contract, that'd be perfect for them. The team has a young core that offers a ton of promise on both sides of the ball, and that's really tough to ignore. Whether it's Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, DJ Hurz, and Josiah Gray, like you mentioned, who's out, but still, when healthy, he's really damn good. On the pitching side of the ball, Dylan Cruz, James Woods, CJ Abrams, Luis Garcia, Andres Chaparro, and Jose Tana. Pretty damn good squad there as well, too. They have stuff in the minors that I think will supplement those guys in the next coming years. But you got to add, you know, some free agents in there to really, you know, bolster your lineup, which I think is probably the weakest part going into 2025. On to Toronto, who went 74 and 88.
Yeah, I gave these guys an F too, because I had them in the playoffs. So I'm understandably upset with this squad right now. I think the only way to save them is to have a really hot start from the Toronto pitching staff, similar to the Boston start last year. So I think that's on the wish list, is get your big rotation making a bunch of money to act like it. You know, there's a way to do this without selling, I think. But if they don't get off to a hot start, Vlad and Bo are gone.
Yeah, I gave Toronto a D. I didn't think they'd be good this year, but I did not think that they would be this bad. An 88 loss season, 2 losses away from 90 is pretty a significant drop from what we saw in the previous years. So I gave them a D. The top of the wish list for me is prospects. I know you absolutely love Vladdy, but unless you think that you can legitimately resign him and not on a bias, because he's been with us for 6 years, he's going to resign. This is the best time to trade him. He had an MVP-type season. I know he's not going to win the MVP or be close to it, but he had, you know, similar to that 2021 season that he had a couple of years ago. He's really damn good again, and this is the most value that you're going to have to trade him. Same with the pitchers, Chris Bassitt, Kevin Gausman. We saw Yusei Kikuchi be traded, but this is your time to trade those guys, and I know it's going to suck, and it's going to be a tough, you know, offseason to swallow if you're the front office with the hate, or if you're a fan of this team seeing your favorite players go away. But now isn't your time in the AL East. And unless you win this offseason free agent market by a wide margin and signing like a Soto Bregman, Adames, the guys that I kind of mentioned with the Nationals, it isn't going to be your time for a while. The farm system is one of the worst in the league, in my opinion. And even the guys that they have at the top of the system are guys that are further out in Trey Savage and Arjun Namala. So this offseason is going to hurt, but it's necessary in the long haul if you want to do anything in this division, because we know that the Orioles are going to be there. We know that the Yankees are going to be there. We know that the Rays are going to find a way to compete. And you know that the Red Sox, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, are going to be there as well too in the future. So I give it a D. This is the time that you have to press the reset button. Pittsburgh, 76 and 86. Yeah.
I'm going to give the Pirates a B minus because you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's mostly because of the young pitchers, specifically Paul Skeens. What an epic season from him. So how about you go after some bats that aren't 37 years old, like all the dudes they had in the lineup this year. And those guys actually played a lot of games. McCutcheon, Rowdy Tellez. So some guys in their price range, Tyler O'Neill, Alex Verdugo, Eloy Jimenez, definitely obtainable for Pittsburgh.
I give them a C minus. This was a weird year for Pittsburgh. This is kind of exactly what I expected to see out of them. At the top of the wish list for me, I have is a 30 homer bat. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bigger name like Teoscar Hernandez, but there's some guys in there that have that potential that I think that Pittsburgh, if they want to compete, they need to add guys like that, because outside of Reynolds and O'Neill Cruz, this team really struggled to find consistent bats, and it seems like every prospect that they've brought up over the past couple of years, hitting-wise except for O'Neill Cruz, has struggled, whether it's Nick Gonzalez, Henry Davis, we saw Yover Puguero kind of get hurt and fizzle out. There's just not a ton of, you know, successful prospects or young players in there right now on the hitting side of the ball. However, they don't need to have a great lineup due to how high tier that top of the rotation can be, you know, in next year or the year after that. Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, and Mitch Keller is a great top three. It's one of the top threes in the league, maybe behind Seattle and another team that I'm forgetting about. So if you have those three guys, just be healthy. I think you're going to be, you know, pretty confident in most of the games that you play in, that you don't need to score, you know, 4 to 5 runs to win a game. You can win with 2 or 3, even on those bad offensive days. Another piece, Johan Oviedo, who was out the entire season due to Tommy John, showed in 2023 that he could be really good. And if he comes back in 25 and is the same way that he was at the end of the 2023 season, he could be a very legitimate arm in there as well too. So I think the Pittsburgh side, the pitching is phenomenal. They just got to sort out those bats, because they can't have, you know, the offense that they had this year going out there next year and doing the exact same thing, or else they're going to be in the same scenario that they were this year. Next up is Cincinnati, who went 77 and 85.
I was pretty harsh on Cincinnati. I gave them a D grade despite all the injuries that were nonstop, because I still feel like this is a team that should have gone over 500. And I think it's another obvious choice here. You mentioned something similar earlier with Chicago, but what they really need is a solid, trustworthy, shiny new manager. A couple former players that have been bench coaches, maybe Miguel Cairo and our very own Darren Bush, former players. They're looking for a diamond in the rough instead of a veteran, I think.
I give Cincinnati a D minus. Like you said, a lot of injuries is really tough, but I just think the season as a whole was a complete failure, except for Ellie De La Cruz, which is why it's not an F. Top of the wish list for me is that Christian Encarnacion Strand or Noel V. Marte turn into the guy that they expect, because most of those guys have not played good. Noel V. saw get suspended for the first 80 games of the season, then post a 500-something OPS. CES got hurt for most of the year, but didn't perform in the time that he was healthy. And I think his trip to the Arizona Fall League, which is pretty unique for a guy who's been in the big leagues before, is going to be something that we see. And hopefully he can rebound there, get his confidence back, because that's a guy that they were counting on to be, you know, their 3 or 4 hitter going into the season. Obviously, you know, when you lose Matt McClain, who is probably the second best player on the team. Yeah. Not probably. He is immensely underrated. He's really damn good. And not having him for the entire season was huge. And I don't think it's talked about enough, because I think I know you and me completely love him, but he's a really underrated guy on the grand scheme of things. Regardless, Ellie De La Cruz is great. That's probably the one good point. because Spencer Steer, Yaimer Candelario, who they brought in, Jonathan India, Benson, Friedel, Fraley, all had down turn seasons, which was not expected from this team, especially with how good they were in, you know, the mid months of last year's season. I still like the rotation a lot. I think Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, Andrew Abbott, Nick Martinez plus one rotation still feels pretty good. And I think with their bullpen as well too, if they get health and, you know, have that top of the wish list and get a manager, it gives me a lot of confidence that this team can bounce back in 25, especially if Matt McClain is healthy. On to Texas, who went 78-84 after winning the World Series last year.
They're going to be a slightly worse D-minus for me because Texas basically had no shot this year. It was a combination of injuries and the World Series hangover. They have all the pieces. So I think on their wish list this season, it's very simple. On opening day, they need DeGrom, Scherzer, Seager, and Evan Carter all available. And they can go make another run.
Yeah. I gave them an F. The season sucked for the Rangers. And top of the wish list, I was looking at this team. I just couldn't figure it out. And so I set a time machine to go back to October 2023 so you can experience it all again. I'm somewhat confident that this team can bounce back just to kind of the anomaly this season was, especially with injuries. But the lineup just did not hit. And we talked about this lineup going into the year as one of the best teams or best lineups in baseball. And they just were not that. Corey Seager, who was your best hitter and was still really good this year, was not close to what he was in 2023 when he was posting over 1.0 OPS. Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, who we felt like were really sure things going into the season, were not sure things except for Semien playing 162. Wyatt Langford, Nathaniel Lowe, Jonah Heim, Ezekiel Duran also all had bad years. And when you lose Josh Jung and Evan Carter for most of the season, that didn't help them at all. So that entire lineup was really just off from day one, especially with Jung getting hurt on opening day, broken wrist or broken hand. I forget exactly what it was. But the pitching wasn't healthy either. And I think it's even more of an uphill battle to get to where you were with the pitching than what you were with the hitting. Especially with the arm injuries for DeGrom and whatnot. And just the age also from DeGrom and Scherzer, I think could be tough to bounce back. It's going to be an uphill battle. They're still going to have talent, especially if they go into this next year with the same team that they had this year. And they could bounce back, but this one I feel a bit more shaky on than what I did on the Reds potentially bouncing back to be, you know, an 85 or an 80, 87 win team next year.
Going to be a big spot for the Vandy boys next year. They're going to have to throw some innings for these guys.
That's true. And I do not have a ton of confidence in Jack Leiter. Kumar Rocker, I think I do, but we'll see. On to Tampa Bay, who went 80-82.
I'm going to give Tampa Bay a C. It's just been a brutal couple of years for Tampa Bay. Their best players were either traded, sent to the 60-day, or sent to prison. So at the top of the list, it's going to be do some more Rays magic. Some of the recent trades are already looking pretty good, specifically Pepio more than Christopher Morel so far. But you got time to go back into the lab with your Rays magic because they aren't too far away. Just a couple of moves here and there, a little league average move that, you know, turns out to maybe be an all-star at the break.
Yeah, I gave the season a C for Tampa Bay because I think a lot of things were out of their control. Top of the wish list I have is Shane McClanahan comes back as the same guy, because when he's healthy, he's a Tarik Skubal type lefty that's really dominant and could be a Cy Young guy when we look, you know, back or look whatever in a couple years from now. I think they took a shot on some guys at the deadline and it didn't really work out, especially with Christopher Morel and Dylan Carlson, who both had disappointing performances in a Rays jersey so far. I do like their pitching, which gives me confidence. With Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot, Zach Littell, and, you know, hopefully McClanahan, Drew Rasmussen, and Jeffrey Springs, who's blanking on his name. But I'm confused to see how they attack this offseason because the offense just sucked. They scored 604 runs. That was only above the White Sox, the only team that they scored more runs in, which is just not – what the Rays are. Their pitching was still really good, only allowed 663 runs, which is, I believe, in playoff playoff territory as far as runs allowed goes. So they need to get offense, but with how their financial system is set up, I'm not exactly sure how they will navigate that. On to the Giants, now the last under 500 team at 80-82 as well.
I'm going to give them a C+. It was a really wonky up and down season for basically the entire squad. I do have a pretty simple wish list again for these guys. You have to spend money on anyone who can score you runs, because you will never surpass the big three of that division if you're scoring less runs than the Blue Jays and the Reds. There's a lot of guys available. We've talked about a bunch of them. There's some bats available for these guys. Buster Posey's got his hands full. That's for sure. I had to mention him.
Yeah. I give the Giants season a D. Like, this season was just not what I expected. I thought this team was going to be a playoff team, and to go under 500 was a complete disappointment. Top of the wish list is Juan Soto, of course. However, I think a more realistic free agent for them is going to be Willie Adames. And I think locking down the shortstop position for the next 6 to 7 or 8 years with Willie Adames could be a big go-get for them. Because outside of Chappie and Elliott Ramos, who are the guys in the lineup? I know we saw Tyler Fitzgerald have a Barry Bonds month. But outside of that, he kind of struggled. Jung-Hoo Lee seems to be promising, but he, just missed the last 4 or 5 months of the season. How is he going to rebound next year? One thing that I do think they really have going for them is the starting pitching. And it will be a huge strength to this team if they re-sign Snell immediately, because, he's got Cy Young stuff. We've seen it twice. He's already got 2 Cy Youngs. He's really damn good, and he's a guy who can easily get his third if he signs back to this team next year. It's just, you can't score as many runs as they scored and hope to get away with it. And I know they're playing at AT&T or Oracle now, and it's going to be tough to score runs. But, man, call yourself a big market team and you do something like this.
Yeah.
It's not very big market, I feel.
Giving up on Soler, too.
Yeah. Next up, Boston, 81-81. Fun 500 team.
Yeah, I'm going to give them a B for that, because it was a weird year, but the potential is obviously through the roof for these guys. And on the top of the wish list is something I've been thinking about a lot. And then Ken Rosenthal had an article confirming this could actually happen soon. That's a big trade for a top line starter that opens up a spot for Roman Anthony. I've heard it could be Will Urabreu, Tristan Casas, Yoshida, maybe even their prospects too. It's another year where it's all about the new GM. I've been big on Craig Breslow. We talked about it. I picked the over on these guys and they hit it. So I'm excited to see what they can do, because it's just a great combination of young guys and a guy like Devers, who is always going to come through for you.
I have starting pitching as the top of the wish list item for Boston. Top trade is an idea that's new to me, but I can get behind that. I think I gave the season a B. I thought this was a bit better than what I expected. I think I had the under on 7.5. So this is a good year for them, in my opinion. You look at Turcor, Devers, Duran, Abreu, Casas, Sedan. Feels like, good young core. Add Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, and Roman Anthony, probably the best prospect trio in the entire MLB, and they all should be in the MLB next year.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at a very scary and young lineup next year that already put up a ton of runs this year. Obviously, I know one of the main parts of that was Tyler O'Neill. We'll see how they decide to go about his contract in the offseason. But the starting pitching needs to be something that they addressed. I know through the first month of the season, like, Boston starting pitching was like the topic in baseball. Cutter Crawford felt like a Cy Young category guy. Tanner Houck, who ended up having a good entire season, felt like he was a Cy Young guy as well, too. But Nick Pivetta and Brian Bello need to step up if they want to compete in the AL East. But if they do get a guy in the starting rotation, add not even top of the line starter. I know you said top of the line starter, and obviously that would help. Mm-hmm. But if you get a couple of threes in there, and your rotation is how Pivetta, Bayo, and then XYZ and XYZ, I think you can compete for a wild card spot in 2025, and then maybe even the division in 2026, depending on how good that big three in the minor leagues is. Next up, Minnesota.
I'm going to give them a D.
82.
Yeah, it wasn't a terrible season overall, but to their standards, this was a massive disappointment. You know, they probably should have won the division this year if everything went right, and they ended up under 500, right? Or just over?
82-80
one game over. On the wish list, I think, is you got to get some new faces in the building, whether it's Walker Jenkins or other guys via trade. This group clearly cannot be trusted to stay healthy.
I gave the season an F. I expected this team to win the division, and they did not do that. Three teams in this division made the playoffs, and they were not one of them. So to get fourth in this division with the fifth team being the worst team in MLB history, it's pretty crazy to me. Top of the wish list for me is a top-tier bat. However, I don't think they're a team that's going to sign Soto. They're not going to be a team that signs Adames because they have Correa. I don't think Bregman fits either. So I said that the team has too many players with so much potential. They need to cash in on a big bat in a trade. And the name that stands out for me is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Because they could do that. They have the guys that I think Toronto would be okay with getting back for Vladdy because they have, you know, maybe, you know, you could even throw Royce Lewis in there if you really, really wanted to. I think you want to keep him, but Edward Julian, maybe Trevor Larnach, Matt Wallner, and maybe some pitching spots in there like David Festa, Zebby Matthews could be really realistic. I just think there's too much inconsistency with this team, and you need to get a consistent guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in there. And this team should be back in competing because I don't think the Tigers, the Royals, or the Guardians are going to go away next year. And you're going to have to get probably 92, 93 wins if you want to win the division, and at least not 82 if you want to make the playoffs. Next up, St. Louis, who went 83-79.
I gave them a C-minus because they underachieved this year, but I do think they're a lot closer than most of the teams that we mentioned. Number one on the wish list for me is a breakout year from Jordan Walker. It didn't really happen this year, but we're not giving up, obviously. I know you're a massive fan of him, too. The honorable mention here is for some more starters to step up and help these vets out. It's just a really old squad, and you know, Goldie replacement is going to be on that list, too, somewhere.
Yeah. St. Louis, I gave a B. I didn't think this team was going to be, I would say good, but this is kind of exactly what I expected, maybe a little bit better than what I expected. And the top of the wish list, they already kind of started doing this a little bit as part ways of Goldie and Nolan Arenado. I think this era of baseball for them is just not the championship contention that they expected. I know they had a couple of decent years in there, but just not as good as what we were expecting with that, you know, MVP type duo. Disappointing years from Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker also hurt a lot. I think two good pieces though were Mason Wynn and Alec Burleson, who felt like they were going to be, you know, mainstays in this Cardinals lineup for the next couple of years, or, you know, 5 to 10 years at least. Starting pitching though, I felt was exactly what we expected, at least in St. Louis Cardinals territory, where Sonny Gray was worse than he usually was. Kyle Gibson was pretty much exactly what he usually was. And Lance Lynn was not a 5 ERA guy, but honestly had a decent season. But everything goes to mid in St. Louis. And Miles Mikolas, you can't be having him start games for you if you want to be successful. So I think the season was decent for the Cardinals. I thought their bullpen was good, especially in the back end with Ryan Helsley. But I give it a B. On to the Cubs, who also went 83-79.
I'm going to give the Cubbies a C+. It's another squad I think is a little better set up for the future. Definitely more than St. Louis in that category. But I think the wish list for the Cubs should be to take the $50 million that you've been spending on Hendricks and Bellinger and try to build around the new core. It's look at what Milwaukee did. They knew they had to completely change up the system. So build around Pete Crow Armstrong. Imanaga looks like he could be a future star. Start with Frankie Montas, maybe steal him away from your division rival, and a Jock Peterson, and you still have money left over for the rest of the bullpen.
Yeah, Cubs are a weird team. I think they did a good job this year in kind of being successful. I didn't think this team was going to win 83 games, so I give them a B. Top of the wish list, though, I do have add a starting pitcher. But what feels different in this team than some of the other teams on, you know, this entire non-playoff team list that we're going to go over. This team feels pretty set. I think Bush at first base, Nico Horner at second, Swanson at shortstop, Paredes at third, Happ in left, PCA in center, Belly and right, or say a Suzuki in right, and one of them DHing, all feel like, yeah, they're going to be there next year. And maybe even, yeah, they're going to be there in 2026 too. Kind of same thing with the rotation. Shota Imanaga's not going anywhere. Justin Steele's not going anywhere. Jameson Taillon's not going anywhere. Javier Assad's not going anywhere. Their bullpen's good as well too. It just feels like this team is like ready to run it back. And I think with the, you know, incremental improvement that they'll have, if they get a starting pitcher and maybe a catcher as well too, even though the market isn't that good for that, we'll kind of just put them right in that wild card category. I don't think this team's going to win in a division anytime in the near future, and they don't really have a star that I'm like, yeah, this guy is going to be leading this team. But I don't mind the Cubs. I think they scream wild card team to me next year.
Go after, or in the race. Rentals.
Yeah. Next up is Seattle, who went 85-77.
I also gave them a C+ because I didn't pick them for the playoffs, so I wasn't as upset with them. And they had some great moments this year, but the lineup is absolutely buns. It's another situation where the wish list is very simple. Available for you in free agency, you have Bregman, Alonso, Adames, Santander. You get the idea. Go fix the lineup. You have so many great pitchers. They're so fun to watch, but if you're not scoring runs, it doesn't matter.
Seattle, I gave an F. I had this team win the division. They did not win the division. They were not a wild card team. They did not make the playoffs. And it really wasn't because of other teams. It was really just because of what they did. The division was very winnable at 88 games for the Houston Astros, and they just didn't get the job done. So I give it an F. Top of the wish list is Vladdy, Soto, or Bregman. I know it's kind of like what I've had for three or four teams, but they need a bat so bad. And I have that in all caps on one of my notes on here. And if they don't get a bat, they're going to waste this generational rotation. This is like 90s, maybe not 90s Braves, because they have four Cy Young category type guys. But it's close. Like Gilbert, Miller, Castillo, Brian Wu, George Kirby, who I almost forgot about, are like all aces. They're all really damn good. And this offense only needs to be average for them to be a World Series contender. And they failed to be a top 25 team offensively this year, which is just so disappointing because they didn't need much to be good and they just failed so hard, especially with the bullpen too. It was really good. Last team, kind of the exact opposite, maybe. The Arizona, not the Cardinals, the Diamondbacks, who went 89-73. Scott, what do you got?
I ended up giving them a pretty good grade, the best one on here, a B+, because it was an awesome year. Specifically the lineup, number one offense in baseball, but it still wasn't good enough. And my all caps of the video is go get some more pitching. Don't mess around. Go get the Corbin Burns or the Snell. You never know how long your window actually stays open.
For Arizona, I thought they had a good regular season, but I gave them a C grade because it felt like the issue was just so fixable and they did not address it too well. And so the top of the wish list I have is a closer. You need a guy who can lock down games for you, especially when you have the best lineup in baseball. And it helps so much now that Corbin Carroll feels like he's, you know, back in the sure thing again. But the Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, Jake McCarthy, Jock Peterson, Randall Grichuk duo, Gabriel Moreno, and Eugenio Suarez feels like a really good group. I think the rotation will bounce back, especially with the full, you know, spring training for Jordan Montgomery. And Eduardo Rodriguez, too, is going to help. Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, hopefully they stay healthy. Another tip I have is just give the shortstop reins to Jordan Lawler. If he's healthy, he's got to be playing. This is one of the top prospects in baseball, and I think he needs to be, you know, the guy for them from now on out at shortstop. But this grade would have been higher if they, you know, just had a better deadline. I know they got AJ Puck, which helped because he was really damn good. But you needed a couple other arms in the back end of that bullpen. They just didn't do that. So top of the wish list is a closer. That's done with teammate grades, or not teammate grades, team grades for now. We'll move on to our all MLB teams. Not going to be as in-depth here. We'll just go, say, position by position, say who the first teamer is, say who the second teamer is, and go forth for that with maybe a quick snippet with you, each of them. So starting off, catcher, who is your second teamer and your first team, Skyler?
All right, the second team catcher is going to be Salvador Perez. Big joke for me on the podcast all season long was the ghost of Salvador Perez is back, carrying Kansas City to the playoffs, and they did it. Lots of homers. First team, William Contreras. It could have been him and his brother. The latter got hurt, obviously, so Contreras with the power and the defense, massive for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I went with second teamer as Yainer Diaz. I thought being, you know, the three hitter on the Houston Astros is pretty important for them and that team. So I went with him over Cal Raleigh and the other guys. And the first team, I went William Contreras as well, too. Could have been Atley up here if he had a decent second half, but he was terrible in the second half. So William Contreras takes reins as best catcher in baseball in 2024. On to first base.
First base, the second teamer, I have to mention Josh Naylor because it was awesome, but Vlad Jr. was a little better, drove in a bunch of runs. And at the top spot, I'm going to give it to Bryce Harper. It's his first full season playing first base, and he looked really natural there. And I really feel like he is the S tier of this position right now, which is awesome, right?
Second team for me, I went with Bryce Harper. Another phenomenal season for him, but I just think Vladdy was a little bit better, so he gets to be my first teamer. Another, you know, guy who dealt with a ton of hate this past couple of years, I think really showed and shut the haters up this year with his season that he had in Toronto. On a second base.
It pains me to put this guy over Marcus Semien, but Marcus Semien had a rough year. It's going to Altuve. Another year older, and it looks like he's getting even better with the bat, which is insane. And the top spot goes to Ketel Marte. I know we DH'd a lot, so I'm not exactly sure when it comes to the real team, if he qualifies, but I have him here.
Yeah, I went with Altuve at second. I think it's a weird year for second baseman outside of the number one spot because there wasn't a ton of, you know, bowl seasons or good seasons, I'd say. But Altuve, even with dealing some injuries, I think deserves a second spot. And then the number one spot unanimously is Ketel Marte. I had the highest WAR as a second baseman by like 2.5. He was really damn good and was an MVP candidate in Arizona that entire year and dealt with injury too. Third base.
Manny Machado gets the second nod for me here. 100 ribbies. He looks like he's back and ready for the postseason. And obviously Gold Glove defense over at third. But it's got to go to J-Ram. So close to the 40-40 season. Another guy that was massively overlooked since we had some insane numbers throughout the league this year.
Second team for me, I went with Matt Chapman. Had a really good second half for the Giants defensively and offensively, which helped that slow start that he had there in the orange and black. I was blanking on the colors there for a second. But Matt Chapman, his really good season, gets in the second spot. And then the number one spot is Jose Ramirez. Like you said, finished just one homer short of the 40-40 season. And he had three homers this year get robbed. I saw a tweet from a Guardians fan talking about that, which is pretty crazy to see. But J-Ram probably should have gone 40-40 and would have the quietest 40-40 season of all time. Just seems to be how J-Ram always stays in the limelight, which is sucks because he's really damn good. Shortstop.
Sorry to Gunnar Henderson, but Francisco Lindor has to be on here because it's another situation where we're probably going to look back at Hall of Fame voting in 10 years from now and go, how did this guy not win the MVP? Are you serious? But obviously the Ohtani 50-50 is something we probably will never see again either. And at the top spot, I think I have to go with Bobby Witt over Lindor, just numbers wise. No one is even close to this guy. Power, speed, confidence, and carrying Kansas City to the playoffs.
Yeah. Second team for me, I did go with Gunnar Henderson. I know Lindor is going to be the, you know, popular choice here, I think. But just because he's playing in a smaller market and had a worse September, August doesn't mean I think I should overshadow Gunnar Henderson's great season that he had. So he gets a second spot, and then number one spot has to go to Bobby Witt. Competing with Judge for the AL MVP was pretty crazy, and he had a ridiculous season. On to the outfield.
So for the outfield, I did specific position. So, we'll go with Profar for the second team for left field. I also really like Stephen Kwan, but he wasn't on the list this year. somehow. So good for you, Profar. But at the top, it's Teoscar Hernandez, by far the most homers for all the left fielders. Home Run Derby champion too. Just a really great signing for the Dodgers. Or was it a trade?
It was a signing.
Okay, good.
I did all the outfield together, so do your center field and right field too.
Okay. Jackson Merrill is my honorable mention for center field, second team. And Aaron Judge, of course. What a ridiculous season for him. And then my right fielder's Santander, a quiet 44 homer for him in right field. And then, of course, Juan Soto. So my first team, Teo, Aaron Judge, Juan Soto.
My second team on the outfield, I went with Jackson Merrill, who had a ridiculous rookie season. Riley Green, who helped lead the Tigers to the playoffs. And Mookie Betts, who dealt with injury, but when healthy, was one of the best players in baseball. And then first team, Aaron Judge is obvious. Juan Soto is obvious. And I also went with Jaron Duran as the last guy in the outfield. Last hitters, DH position, Skeller, who do you have second and first team here?
Sorry, Jordan, but Brent Rooker was one of the hottest hitters on the planet for over a month. So I obviously had to go with him. So happy we got to watch his season. And then the top spot will be Shohei Ohtani. Probably the last time a DH steals 50 bags in a season.
Yeah, almost 60-62, which is crazy. DH for me, second team is going to be Brent Rooker. Shout out to him. He had a ridiculous season as the A's DH. And then Shohei is going to be the number one guy by a very wide margin. On to starting pitching, which is going to be three guys on each team.
For my second team, we'll start it off with Paul Skenes. I know he doesn't qualify for everything, but you know what? The strikeouts qualify. The whip qualifies. Not giving up base runners. Just an awesome rookie season. After him, Logan Gilbert. Again, he doesn't allow any base runners. Another guy who looked unhittable. And I'm going to go with Dylan Cease over Cole Reagans. Probably just because of the K's, mostly. And the first team for me, the top two guys, right, is the Triple Crown winner, Skubal, Chris Sale. I also went with Zach Wheeler, another guy with a lot of expectations, and he came through once again for them. Now that he's getting up there in age too, still got it.
My second team, is going to start off with Zach Wheeler. I think he's the clear four in my opinion, on the hierarchy of starting pitchers in this. Next up, I went with Seth Lugo, who had a really good season on the second team. And then Logan Gilbert to round out the second team as well, too. I think you and me both think highly of him than what other people do. And he had a really good season in Seattle, even though it could be overshadowed by some other guys, even in that own rotation. First team, went with the two guys, Sale and Skubal. Pretty obvious there. And then the last guy I went with was Paul Skenes. I know he has the innings lower than everybody else, but he was the most dominant pitcher in the entire year. Had an ERA below two. And when you do that, like,
yeah,
this guy's generational, man. Like, or I wouldn't say generational. I think maybe there's some guys on his level there, but he's so dominant. This as a rookie season was really cool to see. And hopefully we see, you know, a full season of this next year in Pittsburgh. And then relievers, there's two relievers on each team. So Skyler, who do you go with here?
Yeah. For the second team, I went with the National League guys, Ryan Helsey, Raisel Iglesias, both pretty unhittable for the National League, but the top guys are going to go Clase, one of the best closer seasons we've seen in a long time, and our guy Macy Mills from Oakland. I know the ERA is much higher than a guy like Raisel Iglesias, but you got to remember too, this guy pitched a lot of 2-3 inning saves and gave up some homers at the end of the year, so I don't blame him for that one.
Second team for me is going to start off with Kirby Yates, who had a ridiculous season for the Texas Rangers. Staying Houston Rangers would have got me in trouble there. But a 1.17 ERA is what I believe he had. And for a guy who was really good in San Diego about 5 years ago, then had an injury, and then another injury, and then another injury, and then another injury, and bounced around about four different teams, I think him having the season that he had in Texas deserves to be recognized with an All-MLB honor. Mason Miller, or our favorite Mason Mills, dominated. I think definitely deserves to be on an All-MLB team, whether it's first or second. And then the first team, I had Ryan Helsley, who was really damn good for the Cardinals and has some ridiculous stuff. And then Emmanuel Clase, who's going to get Cy Young votes as my top guy as well, too, is pretty unanimous there. Next up, an hour into this episode, we're finally getting into it. The playoff predictions, the main entree here. Maybe we're having it for dessert. Who knows? But the MLB playoff preview, we'll do the same format that we always do, where we go AL wildcard, NL wildcard, and all the way through down from that. So starting off AL wildcard, the series that's going on right now in the top of the sixth inning. Detroit is up 3-0 in game one. Who do you have winning Detroit versus Houston?
I'm still going to go with Houston, even though it looks like they probably will lose this first game unless something crazy happens at the end, like with the Mets-Braves game. But here's the thing. I don't trust this Tigers lineup one bit because when the lights turn on in the postseason, I know they're playing an early game, but just metaphorically, it's a different league out there. Basically, everyone on this Houston team has played in the World Series. I think they could get it in three if they don't get too discouraged by the Scooball game today.
I have a huge upset here. I have Detroit, but I don't just have them in three. I have them in two. This wasn't something I just did 20 minutes ago. This is something I did last night. And I remember I texted Sean this. I go, nah, I think I'm buying into the gritty Tigs. And this is crazy that I have them winning the AL wildcard game in a sweep in two. Kansas City versus Baltimore. This series is starting literally like right now. I believe first pitch is about to be thrown by Corbin Burnes to Michael Massey. But how do you have this series playing out?
I'm going to have Kansas City winning this one. I didn't write down the number of all the series, but this is probably one that goes three games if I had to bet because, I mean, holy crap, man, the pitching staffs on both these teams. I'm leaning Kansas City because Baltimore's cold right now. You never want to see that starting the playoff series. Obviously, they could turn things around, but the 1-2-3 punch from Kansas City's rotation is going to be harder to score runs on.
Yeah, I feel really confident in Kansas City, especially now with no Bradish and no Grayson Rodriguez starting rotation for the Orioles. I know they have, you know, probably the edge in game one with Corbin Burnes, but it's not by much because Cole Reagans is really damn good. So I'm with Kansas City in three. I think Vinny Pasquantino coming back as well, too. Whether he's 100% or not is yet to be seen. But they got the best player in the series in Bobby Witt, and they have the better pitching. And I think that matters a ton. So Kansas City in three. On to the NL wild card, starting off with Mets, not Braves. Mets versus Brewers.
I'm going to take the Mets in this one. I really like the way they battled back in that first game of the doubleheader. I know that the Brewers did beat them in the head-to-head regular season. But for me, personally, I'm only worried about those head-to-head matchups when it's a divisional matchup. So I like the Metropolitans in this one. It's hard to trust the Brewers offense. It's another squad that it's kind of hard to flip the switch when the postseason starts. You kind of have to keep doing it all season long.
Yeah. What a weird, relationship this Mets and Brewers teams have. I believe they opened up the season against each other. If it wasn't for that crazy doubleheader yesterday, they would have ended the regular season versus each other. And now they play to start off the playoffs. Which is pretty crazy. I have the Mets winning in three games. I think this is a close series. I think this is the closest pitching matchup that we'll see tonight with Severino versus Freddy Peralta. And I wouldn't be shocked if Milwaukee wins game one, but I think just the resilience from this Mets team is going to show in game two and game three and get them that series victory and you know, the winner take all game three. Last one in the wild card series, the Braves versus the Padres.
I think San Diego could sweep them. Here's the thing. It's not just a big three for these guys in the rotation. It's a big four. Yu Darvish and Musgrove are both back. They've both been pitching really well. So you have one of those guys in the bullpen available if things start going south. And I think that gives them a massive advantage against a team that's not going to have Chris Sale for this series.
Yeah, I'm picking the Padres, and I'm picking them in two games. I really think they dominate the series. The Padres are such a complete team, and this Braves team just had to fly across the country in a day after, you know, probably getting a little drunk last night after winning a playoff spot. Like, it's going to be tough to play, you know, a day after that. I'm curious to see how the celebrations were for the Mets and Braves as far as how much they celebrated, because it is something to celebrate, but when you have to fly across the country the next day, or that night, really, and then get ready to play the next, you know, not even night game, but like afternoon game, it's pretty crazy. So I have the Padres in two. I think they dominate that series. On to the ALDS. You have Houston versus Cleveland. How do you think that series plays out?
I'm really screwed if Detroit pulls this one out because I got Houston winning this one in a really close series. it's the type of team that no matter who's on the mound, usually, I know it's not happening today, so I may have to eat my words next Tuesday, but it's usually a team that could put together five runs at least every single game at the end against the bullpen. But, hey, Scooble shoving, I'd still like Houston over Cleveland in this series.
I have Detroit versus Cleveland, and I have Detroit winning in five games in this series. This is a whoever, whenever team in Detroit, and I think that's exactly how you have to be to win a playoff series and win, you know, divisional playoff series as well, too. I think also having Tarik Skubal and having him be as sure as a victory as any pitcher in the league right now is such a huge thing. Because if they win today, they just need one of the next two. If they have him start game one or game two and then come back and start a game five, they just need to win one other game. Like, it feels really damn confident whenever he's on the mound and how good their bullpen is and how good just like the other guys that step up, whether it's a Herter or Holton or Foley or Vest, like they have guys on guys on guys that you feel super confident in with the ball. And I know Cleveland is that exact same vibe without the ace. I think it's a low scoring series, but I do think Detroit wins it in five. Kansas City versus the Yankees is something we both have. Skyler, how do you think that goes?
I'm sticking with New York here. Just an incredible season from Kansas City, but they don't have enough firepower to keep up with the Bronx Bombers, in my opinion. It probably should be a short series, unless they get shut down, of course. It's good pitching, but Yankees lineup, man.
Yeah. I have Kansas City losing in four games to the New York Yankees. I think the evil empire is as powerful as it's been in a long time. And I know maybe the regular season record isn't as dominant as what we've seen in some years past, but with the state of the AL being the way that it is and the Yankees having the two best players, two of the top three players in the entire American League, shout out Bobby Witt, means a lot. So we'll see how it goes. But I have the Yankees winning in four. On to the NLDS, and I believe we have the same matchups here. Two divisional matchups. Man, these games are like perfect primetime games. Starting off with the Mets versus the Phillies. How do you think that plays out?
I'm going to take the Phils. I'm kind of worried about the Mets pitching staff being fatigued by the time they get to Philly, and Philly just gets to sit back and roll out. Again, we've talked about top rotations. Philly is just filthy when it comes to October pitching, and I don't think they're going to have that much of a problem with the Mets, unfortunately.
Skyler, do you have Ian Rappaport on notifications right now?
What?
Can you read that out? Because I don't know if I can say those words, dude. That hurts.
Raider star Devontae Adams informed the team that he preferred to be traded. There's nothing imminent, but a situation to watch for sure. He wants out of Vegas. Very sorry to hear that for you.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Wow.
What did you say for that series? Because I saw that and that tweet in my heart kind of sank.
I'm going to go with Philly. I think they can shut down the Mets offense completely. Yeah.
Yeah. I also have Philly. I think the Mets get a game, but Philly in four seems pretty confident for me in that one. Next up, San Diego versus the Dodgers. A playoff series we saw a couple years ago, which was extremely electric, and the Padres pulled off a huge upset there. How do you think this one plays out?
I'm taking San Diego, and I'm not looking back here. The same thing has happened the past couple of years where the Dodgers just end up facing the exact team they don't want to see at the time. And San Diego's really hot. They match up really well. Like I said, it's a big four rotation, not a three. And that's massive for a potential five-game series here.
I have the Dodgers in five. I think this is the closest these two teams have been in their entire existence. And I know, the Padres beat them a few years ago, but I think there's a case to be made that that Dodgers team is still better than them. They just, found them at the wrong time. This series is going to be so much fun if it happens. And I think the Dodgers in five is probably the way it'll go. However, I wouldn't be shocked if the Padres win. Moving on to the ALCS, you have Houston, right, versus the Yankees.
Yeah.
How do you think that plays out?
Whether it's Detroit or Houston here, I'm pretty confident in the Yankees. Again, I just feel like this is the year. We've mentioned it a couple times during the season that the last time they spent this much money and had the top two out of three, if you will, like you said, it was 09, and they played Philly in the World Series. So I have them going back.
I have number six seeded Detroit going up against the evil empire, the New York Yankees. And this is where I think the Cinderella season stops for the Tigers. Yankees in five. I don't think it's going to be particularly close. Maybe they get the game where Skubal starts, but I think he could be blown out by then just with how much he's going to have, you know, on his plate, you know, in the first couple of series of this October. Next up in the NLCS, I believe, well, we do have different matchups here. You have Philly versus the Padres.
Yeah.
Rematch.
It is a rematch. It's a great one. The National League is going to be awesome this year. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to be the Philadelphia Phillies going back to the World Series. 95 wins this year, an epic regular season. And I really don't think they're missing any pieces. It's just about certain guys in the lineup. Will they get into a slump, or will they keep it going? Because they have a lot of showmen too. And I'll save the rest of that for the next round.
My NLCS, Phillies versus the Dodgers. And Red October can be one of the toughest things and most realist, you know, home field advantages in all of sports. However, I do think the Dodgers take the series. I think the star power of the Dodgers is just higher. I think the bullpen's damn good. I saw some things with the Phillies this year that I wasn't as confident in their lineup as what I was in years past. I know they'll probably turn it on for a couple of games, but I do have the Dodgers winning in seven games, which sets up a crazy World Series matchup. You have the Yankees versus the Phillies, which is ridiculous. Skyler, how does that go, and who is the World Series MVP?
Yeah, this is one of the ones I had really high on my list when we were ranking potential playoff matchups last month. And again, maybe because it's the nostalgia of the 09 series and how great that one was with all the Hall of Famers. But like you said, man, Red October, I'm going with the Phils. They deserve one with this regime. Bryce Harper is a showman. He's going to have a great World Series if he does get there. And he's the obvious choice for the MVP. It's, in my opinion, the best rotation that's in the playoff series. That's why I'm going with Philly. We'll say they win 4-2 in the series.
I'm usually not a fan of picking one versus one, especially in baseball, because that's really the way that it plays out, and there's so many twists and turns. But I have the one versus one in the World Series. I have the Yankees versus the Dodgers. This is, like, if the MLB had a series that they would want, this would be the exact thing, because they have the two best players playing on the biggest stage, and that's the best way to get global, you know, engagement, so to speak. So, who wins? It's tough. It really is tough. I can definitely see it going both ways, and I think you can make cases for both sides. But I have the Dodgers winning in six. I think it'll be a close series. But I just think the Dodgers have more pitching. They have the better bats as a whole lineup. I think the Yankees, I know they – Giancarlo Stanton, Judge Chisholm, their contributions this year have really, like, meant a ton to the Yankees, especially just to make that lineup way more deeper than what it was at the beginning of the season. But the Dodgers lineup is unmatched, in my opinion. So I have the Dodgers winning in six. I didn't choose the obvious choice in my World Series MVP, but I did go with Mookie Betts to get that, because he is an all-time playoff player, would be his third ring, and pretty much cement his Hall of Fame career right then and there.
Yeah. Obviously at the top of the power rankings for both of us, but I go in a different direction, a little October magic maybe.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to the second half, though, that's all we got for the MLB talk as of right now. What do you got in the second half?
All right, we got a little bit of college football talk. We'll keep it short and sweet because we've been here forever, and it's obviously a Major League Baseball postseason episode. But I do have a top four for the Heisman Watch. We'll go through it real quick. At the top, I do have Ashton Jeanty, the running back from Boise State. I kind of feel like it's his to lose at this point since he hasn't slowed down at all. And especially if this team sneaks into the playoffs, it'll be 100% on the back of him and a couple of the edge rushers Boise has. So that's one to watch. At number two, I do have Travis Hunter. We talked about it a little. I wouldn't be upset if he won it over Ashton Jeanty just because how amazing he is, right? He's got a crazy pick and 100 receiving yards in the same game, basically every game of his career, it seems like. Not too far behind him, I have the quarterbacks. Usually it's a quarterback award. They're going to get votes. So Jalen Milroe at three, what an epic game against the Georgia defense. I mean, this guy is also improving his NFL stock too. And at the four spot, it's Cam Ward. He's expected to tear up Berkeley. We'll see, man. I mean, I have Cam Ward as my top quarterback right now. He plays with so much confidence. I love it. We got a couple notable games to watch this weekend. First off, the double rank matchup at 9 a.m. It's number 9 Mizzou at number 25 Texas A&M. A couple teams that no one really trusts to make a playoff run, but could be in it. Of course, the SEC helps a lot with that, so that'll be one to watch for sure. At 4:30, it's number 10 Michigan at unranked Washington. Another should be a really close game. Some great defenses. Steve Belichick versus obviously Michigan is one of the best defenses in the nation. We'll see how Alex Orji does in that one. And then the primetime game, 7:30, at least primetime for the West Coast, right? It's the first ever college football game day in Berkeley. It's number 8 Miami at Cal. I'm not picking Cal to win whatsoever, but it should be a fun test for Cam Ward. He's played against this crowd before, but it's going to be something no one's ever seen before. It's the Libs against Cam Ward, man. And that's halftime for me. Just want to make sure we talked a little about college because it's been a crazy season.
Yeah, since I had a moment to think there with you talking, I think I'll touch on this Davante Adams situation now because it's obviously like, if I don't talk about it now, then we're going to have to wait a week and it'll be kind of awkward there with maybe the stuff that comes out over the next 7 days. But with this going on, it's kind of something like, it's weird. Like, I don't think there's ever been a player that got traded. And then it felt like immediately after, it's like, oh, he's unhappy. Let's trade him again. Let's trade. When's the next trade? When is happening? Where's he going? He's unhappy. What's going to happen? And, you know, maybe that's partially on the Raiders just, you know, getting rid of Derek Carr. Probably, you know, the main reason why Davante came to Las Vegas in the first place. And, you know, Carr being out a year and then out after 1 year and then having that all go down with Jimmy Garoppolo and just not kind of addressing the QB situation. I think it's obviously provoked for, you know, a top tier wide receiver to be unhappy. Although I didn't think he'd come out like this, to be honest with you, with him preferring a trade. But it's something I always kind of expected to happen probably after the season was the most likely thing. But now that he said it, I want it to happen sooner rather than later. If it happens this week, I'm okay with it. If it happens next week, I'm okay with it. But if it, you know, gets down to the point where it's the trade deadline and say we're 5-4, you know, say somehow we have a good couple of weeks here and you're in the playoff contention, and then immediately he's like, oh no, I'm actually bought into this team. You don't want that. Antonio Pierce doesn't want that. You don't want players on your team to be, you know, not fully bought into what's going on. So I think happens, do it right now. But I swear, if we fucking trade him and we don't get a first round pick back, that's when I get mad. Obviously, there's some potential suitors there, and that can be pretty interesting. Jets probably at the top of that list would be the pretty obvious choice. And if he were to go somewhere, I think that's probably, as far as a fit situation, would be where I would prefer him to go. But I also don't think that the pick that we get back from that would be as good as I would want it to be.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, Carolina comes knocking or something like that. Or I don't know who would go for him at this point. Or not go for him, but like, I don't know who would be a reasonable spot for him besides the Jets. Do you have any teams that come to mind for you? Kansas City?
Kansas City obviously has lost two of their starting receivers. Pittsburgh is always in the news about possibly moving a George Pickens. And of course the Jets right now, we're having a lot of trouble with kind of connecting with what Rodgers is looking for. Rodgers likes when guys break off their routes and look back at him a lot. And only Lazard does that. But out of respect for you, I won't talk more about Adams to the Jets. I will say though, you know, superstar receiver is a little different from a safety, but when we traded Jamal Adams, I was heartbroken. I had his jersey. He was an all-pro player. We ended up getting two first-round picks back. That ended up being Elijah Vera Tucker, Garrett Wilson. Sometimes you got to break it down to build it back up again, and I'm sorry you're going through this, but, you know, AP's not a guy that messes around, right? When he says changes are coming, they're going to build what his vision of an elite defensive football team is.
I would be also curious to see what's that value right now for him. Is it, I mean, I would hope at least it's a first round pick and more, but you never really know. Sometimes things just don't end up being that way. And it's a second round pick, especially in a spot like this where it's not a training camp and, you know, time to really gel with a brand new quarterback, unless it is Aaron Rodgers, or maybe it's New Orleans and he gets to go play his car or whatever it may be. But I'm also curious just kind of how the, like, is there a player that comes back? Is that possible? Like, I just don't know. And obviously I'm not going to ask you that question because you don't know either. But I feel like if you're trading somebody like that, you're going to want to get somebody who is at least somewhat proven back. Regardless, we'll see how it all folds out. It's obviously still in the very early stages. We just got the tweet of this stuff with him being unhappy and preferring a trade. Didn't demand one, but prefers a trade. I don't know exactly what that verbiage means in there, but we'll see how that goes. Obviously, like I said, the early stages of all this stuff going down. So hopefully next week we have some more clarity on it.
Yeah.
And kind of just the exact return that would be expected back for that. Moving on to our Layups Bowl predictions. Starting off, it was a pretty good week for us. I went 2-for-2. Skyler went 1-for-2. I had Washington +3. They demolished the Cardinals, so I feel pretty confident in that pick. Because it was great. Skyler had Cincinnati -4.5 at Carolina. It was a closer game than I think we all were expecting. I thought we kind of felt like there's going to be more of a step back from Carolina in week two of the Andy Dalton thing, and maybe just being a, you know, complete fluke against the Raiders. It wasn't. They played pretty good, but Cincinnati still won by a touchdown, so Skyler gets the green there.
Yeah.
This week, I have the Padres advancing as my layup. I think that's probably the most sure one I could have right now. And a season or series hasn't started yet either, so that helps there.
Yeah, I didn't end up going with baseball for my podcast picks here, but you know, if you just listened earlier, I also have San Diego, I also have Kansas City. I'm gonna go with some college football. I have the UCLA Bruins, who are not good, +27.5 at number 7 Penn State. We saw Penn State struggle to score against Illinois last week. We saw them struggle with Bowling Green at home earlier this year. This isn't a team that has blown anyone out in a while. So I'm going to have UCLA hanging around a little longer than people expect in this one.
Last week, bowl prediction. I had Minnesota over Green Bay. It wasn't that bowl. It was like a +120. But it ended up being a pretty healthy victory for the Minnesota Vikings to stay 4-0. Skyler had USF over Tulane at +200. That did not happen.
Tulane's backup cooked them.
That goes red.
Yeah.
This week, I have Detroit advancing as my bold prediction. I know it probably seems less bold now, and I don't exactly know what the odds for Shirley would be now that they're, you know, up in game one and by 3 in the 7th inning. Would probably change the odds quite a bit. But considering when I did originally take this, that would be my pick.
For me, I'm going to go with some Thursday night football. Tampa Bay over the Atlanta Falcons. And Atlanta's a team I still think could win this division eventually, but the whole point of Thursday night football is chaos. And I think Baker Mayfield does thrive in that short week chaos situation. We saw him do that with the Rams too, which was just a hilarious game. I'm sorry, but we'll go with Tampa Bay to keep the streak rolling here.
Yeah. That's going to do it though for episode 212 next week. We'll have more on the Davante Adams drama. We'll know more in the MLB playoffs, of course. We'll probably talk more football than what we did this week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you got any closing remarks?
Happy October, man. Hopefully it's not Houston and the Yankees and the Dodgers at the end like we kind of have predicted. But those are kind of the best teams these days. So let's go Detroit. Even though I didn't pick them, I'm still rooting for them. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back next week with the DS.